This is Rosen Institute's Your Law Firm, where Lee Rosen and Ned Days cover management, marketing, finance, and new technologies for building the practice you deserve. Here's Lee Rosen.
It's good to be with you today from Chobe National Park in Botswana, where we are seeing hippos and elephants and giraffes and buffalo and crocodiles and a host of other animals, and we're seeing them all from a boat. Floating around on the river, it is so much easier than riding around in the back of a truck. We're spending our days floating around and watching the hippos pop up from under the water while elephants come walking down the hills to get a quick drink. It's the relaxed, breezy, cool, pleasant way to visit the animals. And I'll tell you what, I am a big fan. The other day, we came across more than 100 elephants with all these babies, all of them spraying water, some of them swimming. Botswana, it has really been absolutely awesome.
It's time for your tech tip. Every law practice has its share of wild client stories. Handling divorces meant we had no shortage of emotionally charged flare-ups, arguments over absolutely trivial items, and circumstances where we found ourselves privy to a lot more details about our clients' personal lives than we really wanted. There was the jar of marbles we had to store because it was about to be the catalyst for World War III for one couple, the client who dragged in two trash bags full of leaves stripped from the soon-to-be ex-spouse's prized plant collection, and of course a wife who brought in her husband's shoebox full of women's pajama and underwear ads he had clipped from the Sunday paper, which was somehow much creepier than just a good old stack of penthouse magazines. But the most memorable was one that turned a little bit of holiday cheer into something a lot less appealing. I don't recall the exact specifics of who brought it in or why. I believe it was a husband who discovered that his wife was cheating with another man, and in their escapades, they had availed themselves of what would in other circumstances have been referred to as a marital aid. This had now somehow come into the husband's possession and was delivered to us in the box for an artificial, tabletop-sized Christmas tree. Thankfully, I never saw what was inside, although in some ways that was probably worse as it left my mind to wander through all kinds of horrifying possibilities. But from what I gather, the device didn't necessarily need the entire Christmas tree box. That was just the most convenient vessel, and nobody in the office was exactly eager to transfer it to a different enclosure. Why we needed to hold on to this for months and months, I don't recall. I think the plan was maybe it would be used as evidence of some kind, but it probably boiled down to humoring an understandably distraught client. So for much, much longer than it should have, that festive box leered at us every single day, perched on a high shelf that you couldn't miss once you knew what it was. It was a bit like the telltale heart, except that instead of a heart beating beneath the floorboards, it was a sex toy in a Christmas tree box menacing us from atop a cabinet in the copy room. We undertake lots of projects at our firms to make sure that our lives are easier and our employees' lives are easier, and I would wager that some of the best firms place just as much importance on the client experience. We bend over backwards to take care of our clients, to make them feel safe, and promise that we will shepherd them through confusing situations. But we are all weird, and so are our clients, and sometimes, as a result, we add or accrue tools or responsibilities or commitments in our practice that hang around far longer than they should, or that we just shouldn't have started in the first place. I know that I have an incredibly bad habit of prioritizing whatever was the focus or complaint of the last person in my ear, no matter how crazy. If the majority of your clients want to be able to text you via SMS or pay via credit card, offering those options probably makes sense. But there's also going to be that one guy who only wants to communicate via postal mail and pay in silver ingots, and he has some long-winded story about that dog McKinley and the Spanish-American War, and for a minute you are going to get sucked in and think, yeah, we really do need to start accepting bushels of wheat as payment, and I'll talk to Western Union about sending telegraphs. Now, if you are going to make $500,000 off of Mr. Silver Dollar, by all means, but whether you are considering minting NFTs of all your contracts or converting the office to steam power because of the request of a single client, always be thinking about how these decisions align with the clients you want and the practice you are after. Keep in mind that clients look to you for guidance. They don't deal with legal matters as often as you do. For some of them, this may be the only time they need the kind of services that you provide. There's obviously a balance you want to strike where you are accommodating, helpful, and provide the attention that they need, but you also don't let them complicate things unnecessarily. Remember that you are the builder and your job includes telling them that pool noodles aren't an appropriate framing material. This is also why identifying your ideal client is so important. You hear us talk about your client's story fairly regularly. If you've read any book or been through any program on marketing, you have come across this concept. The story, the avatar, it has many names, but it's the same idea. We used our ideal client profile to guide every decision at the practice. Does this website answer the questions our client has? Does our onboarding process work in the way he wants? Do our tools offer the features he expects given the world that he lives in? Does our marketing hit the right notes for him? The clients we wanted expected to be able to arrange a ride and order a burrito from their phones, so we prioritized things like giving them access to us, their files, and our services from their devices as well. Your clients may want something else. And just as important, focusing on the client we wanted rather than the last one who caused a scene made us fairly ruthless about pruning procedures and tools and services that didn't match. That certainly doesn't mean you shouldn't experiment, quite the opposite actually, but always be judging the work you are doing and steps you are taking against the ideal client, not the one in the lobby with a bag full of leaves. Now, it's possible that a new website or communication channel or in-office lockers for marital aids totally match your ideal client's desires, but never stop evaluating whether what you have taken on or are about to take on to make a single client happy is actually moving you toward the practice you want. I'm Ned Days, and that's your tech tip.
And now for your moment of concise advice. I stayed in a hotel recently where nobody ever asked me for feedback. I was waiting for someone to ask because I had a few suggestions to offer for this hotel. They were just small things, things that I thought would be useful to making the hotel a better experience. They were low-cost, big bang for the buck suggestions, but nobody asked. There was simply zero interest in asking me for my feedback, and that kind of surprised me. After 9 years of living in hotels, I'm used to being asked for feedback. It usually happens in the breakfast room or while we're hanging out somewhere in a public space in the hotel, chatting. A manager will walk by and stop and check on us and ask us about our stay. And I would say that that happens at least 7 out of 10 hotel stays. We often stay in hotels for a long time, so we're pretty used to the managers coming up and asking us for feedback. But even when it doesn't happen, usually the desk clerk, when they're checking us out, that person will ask for feedback about our visit. But during this recent stay, we were never asked, not a single time. And it started to feel a little bit like they really didn't want to know what the guests were thinking about the hotel. And I sort of get it. I kind of understand avoiding asking that question. It's a difficult question to hear the answer to, and we don't always want to hear the answer. I remember in my practice not always wanting to hear what my clients thought. Sometimes that can be very painful. Asking for feedback, it's difficult. I remember a particular situation. One day, I was sitting at my desk and my heart was pounding as I called this particular client seeking feedback. We had a system for asking for feedback, and sometimes I approached those calls with dread. We had scheduled a conversation with this particular client. I had asked for feedback on how our firm had done with their case, and I was prepared for the worst. This client had expressed some frustration and some anger with one of our associates, and I had feared that this dissatisfaction was going to be directed at the entire firm, including at me. And as the phone rang and I sat there waiting for the client to pick up, I took a deep breath, steeling myself for the torrent of complaints that I knew were going to come my way. But to my surprise and to my delight, the client's voice on the other end of the line, it was filled with enthusiasm, with gratitude. "I have to tell you," he started off, he said, "your firm did an incredible job. I know I had some issues with one of your associates, but how you've handled my case since then, it has been amazing." The client went on to say, "You pulled a rabbit out of the hat and you delivered results that were way beyond what I expected. I couldn't be happier with your services." And I laughed to myself as I listened to this. That was such a relief. I was so pleased not to be getting screamed at by this client. And the client went on and provided all sorts of feedback, most of it very positive, some of it very constructive. And I truly was grateful for the information, advice, and ideas that the client gave us. The client spent nearly half an hour, and I had pages full of notes from this client's input. Moments like these, especially when they turn out okay, they really do underscore the importance of regularly seeking feedback from clients. And I'll emphasize here, getting this feedback by voice or video call, I think that's a lot better than getting it by text or email or as a response to a written survey. When you're able to communicate directly with the client, you'll be able to more effectively gauge the client's satisfaction or dissatisfaction. You'll have better information about the areas that need improvement. But it's a little difficult. It feels a little risky to ask for this kind of feedback. We don't always welcome opening this can of worms that may lead in a difficult direction. I got lucky with this particular call, but these communications, they can be an emotional roller coaster. Sometimes you may find yourself on the receiving end of a client's disappointment or a client's anger, and that can be upsetting. It can be challenging to navigate. Now, some of the time, as in my situation with this particular client, you might be thrilled to discover that the hard work that you and your firm has done has positively impacted your client's life, that the client is satisfied and happy with the work that you've done and with the outcome. Client feedback, it'll take you in all sorts of different directions. Sometimes you may hear concerns that you realize were unavoidable, that the client's dissatisfaction, it was not a reflection of your performance. In some cases, you may identify areas where you can, in fact, significantly improve your services and take steps to address shortcomings in the way that the clients are being treated. I encourage you to go for it, to get the feedback, and to implement a multifaceted approach to getting feedback that combines automated surveys with these sorts of personal interactions. Start by sending out surveys via text or email that allow the clients to respond at their convenience and that may make them more comfortable sharing their thoughts. But don't underestimate the value of these in-person meetings or phone calls. They provide space for clients to elaborate on their experiences, to share their insights, to give you suggestions for improvement. So go get the feedback. Open that can of worms. See what it is that crawls out. Welcome the bad and the good. And once you receive that feedback, take the time to acknowledge the client's input. Expressing your gratitude for their feedback, it can strengthen your relationship with the client and make the client feel even more valued by the law firm. And then take it from there and encourage your happy clients to go further and to refer friends and family and to write positive reviews. I'll tell you, for me, I sometimes find myself falling into the trap of not asking for feedback, just like that hotel that seemed not to want to hear it. It takes a push to make me go out and do it. And the best push, I think that's to make it part of your system, to make it the way things are done in your firm for this client and for every client. Build it into the interactions between the client and the firm so that it's always happening in every case. Now, I'm not pushing you to put one of those red, yellow, or green buttons that you see on the wall in a public restroom as you exit, but I am pushing you to make regularly asking clients for feedback part of the system of your law firm. The bad news that you get, it will help you improve, and the good news, it will make your day. That's your moment of concise advice. Wrapping up from Botswana, thanks for spending a few minutes with me and Ned today. We hope you have a great weekend and an even better week next week. Keep plugging away, moving forward, and getting things done. You're on the right track. You'll get there. I promise. We're all in this together, and together we build better practices through better marketing, better management, and better technology. Until next time, I'm Lee Rosen.
Thanks for listening to Your Law Firm. Visit rosensrules.com for our free course on the 10 critical rules successful law firms follow.